Good morning. So we are doing a study in the book of Amos. We've been doing it for the last several weeks. And Amos is a book that's extremely challenging. And as I've talked about over this series, one thing that I'll say to people is if they want to know what God looks like with skin on, go look at the life of Jesus. But if you want to see the heart of God, God's heart for the world, read the prophets. And Amos is one of the prophets. It's toward the back of your Old Testament if you're kind of following along. We'll be in Amos chapter 4 to start out this morning. And Amos is going to give us a challenging message about what it means to follow God, especially today. This one is going to be a challenging one, especially as people who easily often take comfort for granted. I mean, we oftentimes just take things that are comfortable and easy, and we start to prefer them. I mean, I have a barbecue behind me, so that's a good illustration to use. Usually, when you do a barbecue, people like the barbecue purists will say, like, well, charcoal tastes the best, you know, it's, and people are nodding their heads with me. Yeah, it tastes better. But, I mean, who has that, like, 30 minutes to wait while the coals warm up and everything? I mean, who has that time anymore? And so now people have gas grills, which make it so much faster. You can just turn it on in a heartbeat. That's how so much of life seems to be, especially for people who are affluent by the world's standards. And the problem isn't necessarily comfort in and of itself. I believe that God blesses us and gives us the opportunity to enjoy the pleasures and comforts of life. But the problem is eventually what's comfortable becomes what we take for granted. And then we just go to find comfort in other ways or other places. And the problem is when we choose comfort as our God. Amos has a tough word for two different groups of people, starting in Amos chapter 4, verses 1 and 2. Hear this word, you cows of Bashan on Mount Samaria, you women who oppress the poor and crush the needy, and say to your husbands, bring us some drinks. The sovereign Lord has sworn by his holiness, the time will surely come when you will be taken away with hooks, the last of you with fish hooks. So scholars think that Amos is maybe outside a marketplace or something, but he's speaking directly to women here. And he says to these women, you're oppressing the poor, because that's the problem in the book of Amos. The rich are very rich, and the poor are very poor. And so he starts by saying to this group of women, you cows of Bashan, which probably wouldn't be that favorable of a thing to say to a woman, right? And it's not really that like good thing to start out with. If I'm ever teaching a preaching class, like to a young preacher, I'm going to say, like, don't start out with this, maybe. Like, maybe soften up to that a little bit. Don't go for the blow right there at the beginning. And what you have to know is the cows of Bashan were famous in this area. It was kind of known as the primo beef in that world. I don't know what would be an equivalent, maybe Kobe beef or something else, like the kind of finest meat in the world. So they would have known that the cows of Bashan were especially famous. A commentator says this about Bashan, the cows of Bashan, that says, this plateau is extremely fertile pasture land because of its basalt soil and plentiful rainfall. It was famous for its fatlings. So this is what Amos is saying to these ladies. He's calling them these cows, these famous cows, these fatlings who would just eat off this land. So again, if I'm teaching a preacher how to preach, I don't really start there. You want to soften the blow to get there, perhaps. And what you'll notice about this passage as he speaks to this group of ladies is he says, you just say to your husbands, get us more drinks. And in that society, it was a patriarchal society, so women didn't have a huge role in that world. But the role that they do have is sway over their husbands. And it's saying, Amos is saying, all you do is you just say, give us more drinks, make our lifestyle more lavish, make it more simple, make it more easy. And eventually, we're going to see that these women are actually extremely religious. Someone said, a preaching friend of mine says that it's where we get the phrase holy cow from, maybe, because they are very, very religious. And this oracle that Amos gives to them then ends with this statement. He says, you're going to be pulled away by fish hooks. And people think the elite in that society would wear rings in their noses. So Amos is saying, because of this, because of the power that you do have, the sway that you do have in this world, you're just using it to get your husband to give you more drinks, to live a more lavish lifestyle. Because of that, you will be pulled away. Because you are part of the oppression and you aren't thinking about what you could do to make a difference. And so you can imagine this didn't really go over all that well. You know, hey, this guy called me a cow. And so you can imagine that this group of guys then comes out to hear this Amos guy, to shut him up, to maybe say something to him. You know, please stop saying things like that. And so in Amos chapter 6, there's a group of guys that Amos is speaking to. He says, "Woe to you who are complacent in Zion, and to you who feel secure on Mount Samaria, you notable men of the foremost nation to whom the people of Israel come. Go to Kelna and look at it. Go from there to Great Hamath, and then go down to Gath in Philistia. Are they better off than your two kingdoms? Is their land larger than yours? You put off the day of disaster and bring near a reign of terror. You lie on beds adorned with ivory and lounge on your couches. You dine on choice lambs and fatted calves. You strum away on your harps like David and improvise on musical instruments. You drink wine by the bowlful and use the finest lotions, but you do not grieve over the ruin of Joseph. Therefore, you will be among the first to go into exile. Your feasting and lounging will end." So Amos describes to this group of men the kind of life that they're living. It's a life of comfort. It's a life of ease. They have the finest lotions, which is kind of weird to say to a guy, but they have the finest lotions, apparently, and they're using the finest lotions. They drink wine by the bowlful. They just sit around just plucking away at musical instruments. They eat the choicest meats. And they eat whatever meat they could want. They have the best meats at their disposal. And they just sit there and lounge at these parties and events. They throw the choicest meats on the grill and they say, "Just give us another steak. Just throw another steak on the grill. We're going to see how this goes. I haven't practiced it." So these men are having these lavish parties, and it says you eat the choicest meats. This is from Ralph's. This is very choice. So you drink this wine by the bowlful. You have the best kind of meat. And you don't care at all about the oppressed. You don't care at all about justice. And you have to know, in that society, it was very, very rare for people to eat meat. Only the richest of the rich would regularly have meat. And for most people, they'd only have it 3 times a year. The poor almost never had meat. And we kind of think that that's surprising. But the same is true in our world today. I mean, we kind of have this comfort and we have the ability to have meat at a lot of meals. But look at this graph of kind of the world's meat consumption. And the reddest places are the places that eat the most meat in the world. You can see America is pretty red there. Australia is too, but most of that's kangaroo meat. So it's a little bit different. But per capita, on average, Americans eat between 103 and 137 kilograms of meat a year. And so if you have the ability to have beef or chicken or pork at your meal, maybe you choose tofu, but if you have the ability to have meat regularly, you should consider yourself extremely wealthy by the world's standards. And generally, that's something that we take for granted. Here's a picture. Let's go to the next one, Spencer. Here's meat consumption worldwide. In the U.S., you'll see, is bigger than the kangaroo nations right after us. Australia. We eat meat pretty regularly, and I would say generally we take it for granted. And Amos says to this group of men, you continue to just have the choicest steaks. You drink wine by the bowlful. and you don't really mourn. And he concludes with this statement, which is interesting. He says, you don't mourn over the ruin of Joseph. And commentators aren't exactly sure what that means. But some people think this. In Genesis chapter 37, there's the story of Joseph. You know the story, Joseph and the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Joseph is like talking to his brothers, and he's really proud of himself. He has this dream. He's like, hey guys, like, there, I had this dream where you all started bowing down to me. Isn't that cool? And they're like, no, not really. And then they decide they're eventually going to sell him into slavery. So they throw him down into this well. It says, so when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the ornate robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. The cistern was empty. There was no water in it. And then as they sat down to eat their meal, which is kind of a weird twist in the story, right? It's like, then they just went to Subway after that. And just like, just throw your brother in a pit. And then it's just like, and then after that, we went to Subway. It's just kind of a weird twist in the story. It makes the Bible a little more realistic than movies, right? Because movies, it's like, when does the bad guy go to the bathroom? When does he eat? And they just are doing things constantly. So this is a little more realistic than movies, perhaps. But it's like, they throw their brother in a well, and then they just like sit down for a meal. Like, you know what's a good idea? Let's have a picnic. Like, I think that's the next logical step after like betraying our brother and throwing him into this deep pit. Let's have a picnic. And so they sit down and eat their meal. And so commentators on the book of Amos think that this is what Amos is referencing, that their brother is in trouble, that in fact they're the ones who have oppressed their brother. They've thrown him into this pit. And as he's in this pit, they just think, let's have lunch. So Amos speaks to these men, and he says, you don't grieve over the ruin of Joseph. See, Amos is saying to these people, you are part of the problem, and all you're doing is seeking more and more comfort. You drink wine by the bowlful. You have the finest lotions. You cows of Bashan, all you do is ask your husband for drinks. They say, let's just throw another steak on the grill. Instead of asking questions about what they could do to be part of the problem in their world, to make things a little bit better, they just say, let's throw another steak on the grill. You know, the reason that when you read through the prophets, when they talk about money and resources and wealth, the reason why they ask questions of the rich isn't because it's bad to be rich or because rich people are inherently worse than poor people. It's because the rich people can do something about it. It's because they have resources to do something about it in their world. They have the ability to do something about the justice and oppression that happens in their world, but these people just continue to choose comfort. They continue to say, instead of seeking ways that they can use their resources for better, they just continue to say, how can I be more comfortable? And so the reason that Amos and the prophets talk about the rich isn't because they're worse or better. It's because they have the influence to make something different happen. And they don't. Did you know that the three richest men in the world today have more than 48 countries combined? The three richest men in the world have more than 48 countries combined. Oftentimes people will talk about like the suffering and injustice in our world, and there are certainly questions that we should ask about that. But how often is it not God's lack of provision, but our own lack of compassion? Affluence easily leads us away from those who are in need and causes us to go back in different directions. In Deuteronomy, God is giving these laws and rules for what it's going to look like in his kingdom. He's saying, this is going to be different in my world and my kingdom. And he says this, if anyone among you is poor, if any of your fellow Israelites is poor, in any of the towns of the land the Lord your God has given you, do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted toward them. Rather, be open-handed and freely lend them whatever they need. Freely lend them whatever they need. I mean, think about the posture of this. Instead of grabbing hold and grabbing tight, freely lend whatever people need. I mean, so often I think that American culture is about just getting as much as you possibly can, that you have a right to as much as you possibly can get. But God is calling on all of his people to act differently, to have a different perspective, to not live trying to grab as much as you possibly can, but to live with hands that are open. And this was a time in Israel's history, as we've talked about, that they had claimed some new territories and some new trade routes were coming in, and so they were extremely wealthy. But by the world's standards, we are too. I think Amos has a hard question for us. Are we choosing comfort? Are we choosing what we have, the resources, the power that we have in our world to really bless those who are in need, the things that God has given us, the things that God has blessed us with? Are we using that to bless our world, or are we choosing to be more comfortable? Thomas Jefferson had this quote when he talked about God one day coming back into our world. He said, "I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that his justice cannot sleep forever." Now, Thomas Jefferson was definitely not a perfect man by any means. In fact, he had over 100 slaves. And he talked about one day that it was a good idea that slavery would end. And he talked about even and wrote about the fact that one day, slavery shouldn't be a part of this country. So he wrote about the virtue of releasing his slaves. But he never did. I mean, he thought about it, thought it was a good idea, thought that maybe the world would be like that someday. When you have over 100 slaves, there's a certain kind of lifestyle that comes with that, that it was just too hard for him to give up. Henry David Thoreau says it this way: "Most of the luxuries and many of the so-called comforts of life are not only indispensable, but positive hindrances to the elevation of mankind." And think about that quote for a second. Not only indispensable, but positive hindrances. The things that at one time are so comfortable, the things that at one time we celebrate because, wow, life is so much better with this, eventually it just becomes indispensable. Eventually we can't live without it. And so we just seek new ways to be comfortable. When I got an upgrade on my phone a year and a half ago, I insisted on not having the internet on it just because I don't want to have it with me all the time. And the person looked at me like I was speaking another language. I mean, they just thought I was crazy. And the reason why is because I know myself. If I had it, I would use it all the time and not be as present around other people. I already am not present enough as it is. So I didn't want to double that. They looked at me like I was crazy. And eventually, what's comfortable becomes our standard. And eventually, everybody has to have a phone that can give them directions. Eventually, everyone needs a dishwasher. I mean, anyone living in an apartment, you might say, nod your head on that one. I'm the dishwasher in our house right now. And everyone eventually needs to have meat at every meal. Everyone eventually needs to have these kinds of comforts. And the problem with these kinds of comforts, again, is not the comforts in and of themselves. I mean, I believe that God gives us these things and we're supposed to celebrate them. I mean, when we have a great meal, when we have a great steak, then celebrate it. But the problem is when we get comfortable, when things become so easy, we don't celebrate it anymore. We're not able to really enjoy the fact that we have this great blessing that's right in front of us. And eventually, the thing that was once so comfortable and so amazing, I can't believe I have that, becomes a toy that's like thrown over in the side of the room. Eventually, the thing that at one time was so special and so amazing doesn't really fulfill us anymore. And again, comfort is a good thing, but it should not be our primary objective. It shouldn't be the primary thing that we're living for. And the problem with letting that happen is this. When you choose to let comfort be kind of the center of your world, when you say, you know, I'm just going to be as comfortable as possible, and I'm not really going to think about oppression or think about issues or think about anyone else in other situations, when you allow that to happen, the problem is you become God in your story. I mean, if you think about it this way, you may not have somebody who can like run and come fan you when you get hot, but eventually you go like, whoa, we really have to have AC in here, or we really need this. And so you become the God in your story. I mean, when you live with comfort as your main objective, and when your desires, your wants, and your needs become primary in your world, then you become the center of the story. And the message of the Bible is that there's a God and we aren't it. That there's a God and we aren't it. And as followers of Jesus, our goal is to serve God, not become God. There's a wordplay that goes on as Amos is speaking to this group of men. If you go to that next slide, Spencer. As he's speaking to the men in Amos chapter 6, he says, "You notable men of the foremost nation." What he says there is the first nation. It's a Hebrew word, the first. And he says, "You drink wine by the bowlful and use the finest," but that's actually the first lotions. It's a way of saying it's the best lotions. And so he's saying to these people, you want to be first, and it kind of runs through over and over and over again. If you want to be first, if you make yourself the first, the center of the story, you're using the finest lotions on yourselves while other people are oppressed, and because of the way that you're living, you stamp on the heads of the poor. If you want to be first, then eventually you'll be first into exile. Eventually, because you've chosen comfort over the heart of God. The heart of God to have open hands for the world. And that's the problem with choosing comfort. That's the problem with putting it first. Because it allows us to become the God in our story. And we start to think about how we can become comfortable instead of how we can serve our world. So I have a challenge for you guys this week. I want you to think of something that you use consistently that makes your life a little comfortable or a little bit easier. And I want you for the first 3 days this week, I don't want you to hate me, so don't do it the whole week, but for the first 3 days, I want you to think of ways how you can just not use whatever that thing is for the first 3 days. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then on Thursday, I'll be nice, you could have it back. But on Thursday through Saturday, I want you to really celebrate that thing. I want you to be happy that it's in your life. I want you to be able to say, wow, I really was taking that one thing for granted. So here are a couple examples that I came up with. You can come up with something on your own. Spencer, if you go a couple slides up, I think. And some of them are pretty simple. A debit card. Maybe you can like actually go in the bank for a change. I mean, we use debit cards everywhere. You can actually go in the bank and realize that was how people used to have to do it a few years ago. You had to actually go into a bank to get your money. So just go without your debit card for the first 3 days. go without your cell phone. There might be a gasp in the room saying that. You can try to go without your cell phone. See how that would work for 3 days and then celebrate that you have it back on Thursday. Try going without air conditioning at home. You probably can't tell people at work, like, we need to turn this thing off. You probably can't do that. But maybe air conditioning at home. Maybe for a few days you try to go without your car. And again, the point of this is not to like make you feel bad, but to make you realize just how blessed we are. And so on Monday through Wednesday, talk about this as a family. Come up with something, and maybe your spouse, like Mandy had some ideas for me. I was like, come on, that's a little harsh when I told her about this idea. Maybe your spouse needs to come up with that idea for you, something that will be a challenge, something that you do take for granted consistently. Because it's so easy for us to just get used to a certain level of comfort. Then we just take it for granted and try to find comfort in other places and in other ways. And the main priority of our lives should be to serve God, not to be as comfortable as possible. Let me check on how my steak is doing back here. I don't think it's quite done. Well, let's say that it was. It actually looks decently close. Yeah, it might be. Let's say the steak was done. Like, if I sat down and had this meal, it would be really good, right? I mean, this looks like it's Ralph's quality, okay? Only the finest meats at Ralph's. So I have this meal and I sit down and eat it. And it tastes really good. We know what'll happen in a few hours. I'll just be hungry again. And I'll be looking for my next meal, my next steak. And the problem with choosing comfort is this is all you get. And when it's over, you're just seeking another way to be comfortable. You're seeking another way for things to be easy. And it doesn't last forever. As I thought about this, I was thinking of Chris and Crystal, who shared about their time in Africa a few weeks ago. And they were talking about how difficult it was, the work that they did, how they were in the slums in Africa, had trouble using bathrooms there. I mean, it was just a really tough trip over thousands of miles, cost both of them a ton of money to go there to work and be in this community for a few weeks in Africa. And Chris is sharing about this story, and as he's talking about it, and this trip that was, I'm sure, extremely uncomfortable. International flights are so long, they're really expensive. It was hard to be in a totally different culture, not having the same comforts that we enjoy in this world. And as Chris was sharing about his experience and what happened there, he just started crying. I've never seen Chris cry, okay? And I've never seen him cry. And guys, pretty much, not even all guys cry at their wedding day. I mean, and he was just crying as he shared about this story. Because there's so much meaning to be found in our lives when we choose to be uncomfortable, when we choose to sacrifice, when we choose to say, I'm not just going to say that this is the best way to live, and we question the things that we use consistently, the things that make our lives easy. And we say, I'm not going to accept just that anymore. I want to live for something more. And God's goal for us is to realize that life is more than a good steak, or life is more than lounging around using the finest lotions. God's question for us is, are we constantly choosing comfort, or could we be a little more uncomfortable to serve those who are in great need? May we choose to live a life that looks beyond the comforts that we consistently enjoy. And may we choose to see how we can be part of making this world a truly better place and blessing those who are in need. I hope that we'll ask the serious questions of our lives, places where maybe we were taking comfort for granted, and how we can boldly take steps to maybe be a little more uncomfortable so that others can experience the love and hope that God has for them. Because the good news is you are created in the image of God. And it's our job to tell others that they are as well. Let me say a prayer. God, I thank you for the book of Amos. It's an extremely challenging book. It's a book that makes us really question all the wonderful comforts that we enjoy, the things that we have in this world. I pray that we'll never choose comfort over your kingdom, that we'll be people who consistently look for how we can use what we have to bless those who are in need, to reach out into our broken world. God, I pray that we'll never settle for comfort, but that we'll enjoy it when we're experiencing it and seek how we can serve you more. God, there are so many needs in our world, and I pray that we'll be part of the solution. In your son's name I pray, amen. Let's stand together and worship God, the one true God.